You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 270 for the week of August 27th, 2023. Welcome back, everyone, to the longest-running podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. As usual, this is Amin, and I'm joined by two guests here to talk about Comic-Con 2023, Tara and John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It's been a long time.
It has been a while. We always have you on, both of you usually, for this annual Comic-Con recap, so it's good to have you back. And we may have Ashley as well. She was here. She was having some mic issues. Hopefully she might be able to come in halfway through, but we'll see. The show must go on, as they say. So what we're going to do is basically kind of just talk day by day about some of the highlights we had at San Diego Comic-Con. And then at the end of the episode, I might put the record from one of the panels we did, the Podcasting 101 panel. And I might do a separate record at Bastards of Kingsbury where I really go into the details of what I did. You know, I don't want to spend too much time talking about just what I did, right? It's more our group chat, so that'll be good. So why don't we just start with early convention, since I was there earlier. Tara, you came in on Thursday, right?
Yeah, I got there... I got there just in time to pick up my pass, like maybe within a half hour before they closed. So I grabbed that and then met up with actually Jonathan and a few other people for dinner. So that was my Thursday night.
John, were you there on Wednesday or did you come in on Thursday as well?
We actually got in late Tuesday night and went and just walked around Balboa Park in San Diego on Wednesday. So we had a good time just meeting up with one of Talia's friends who just moved out there. And then we picked up our badges and went into the dealer's hall for preview night and enjoyed the chaos that is preview night.
Well, preview night was actually, I'll mention generally, one of the differences you would have all noticed this year, it was because of the lack of Hollywood content with the writer's strike and the actor's strike. The exhibitor hall was a lot busier generally during the convention, so preview night was even more appreciated before it really got as busy as it did. Even on Thursday, it got busy.
So I actually thought preview night was more crowded than Thursday during the day.
It might be because preview night everyone's trying to get the exclusives, right? It's the first chance to get all the dumpster fires and all the other exclusive stuff, right?
Yeah, so we walked around preview night. I almost bought a Grogu painting, but my daughter overruled me, so I actually never bought it.
Oh no! You got to spend on yourself at Comic Con.
I spent on other things, but spend. The whole reason to get the Grogu painting would have been for my daughter's boyfriend, and she's like, "No, we're not doing that."
So. Okay, well, it's actually that makes sense. It was for him. It was for yourself. Then you gotta get it. But I kind of mentioned one of my pet peeves of the exhibitor hall, because it started on Wednesday, is the issue of lines getting capped. Like if you're trying to go buy something, and I was trying to go in the fig pin line to get some exclusive fig pins. They had 1,000 limited items, and the line would get capped, and then you're kind of like stuck trying to get in the line. They're like, you got to keep moving, and you kind of like circle around in this whole little game where you just go walk around circles nearby until you hope the line opens up again, and then you can get in. And it's just like really annoying. I mean, and I don't know if there's much of a solution to it. I mean, some companies could actually have room for multiple booths, but it is something that's quite common. Even if you get the lottery, like another night we had the UCC lottery and we couldn't even get a line, even though we had the lottery for that day, because the line kept getting capped. So that was, not a good experience.
Was that just for preview night or like all the time? Because I didn't go into the exhibitor hall but maybe twice or three times this year, and very briefly two of the three times, and there were no lines anywhere. So
it depends on the particular booths. Most of the places did not have lines, but it was more than preview night. Like if it was UCC exclusives, and then Funko, Figpin, these kind of specific booths that have limited items that are only sold at San Diego Comic-Con, then those ones have usually lines get full and get capped. Or some certain artists like Priscilla Wilson is an artist that is pretty popular there, and we had to try twice to get into her line and even get in early in the morning because it would just get capped quickly. So, yes, most places don't have a line, so you won't notice it, but if you go in a specific place that it is capped, then you will notice that's kind of how it was.
I don't quite understand why they don't set up more of a lottery system similar to the signing system for some of these exclusives, and then have you pick up the exclusives outside the dealer room where you're not necessarily creating havoc. But it's something they may want to think about trying to do to keep the dealer room clear.
Well, it was also, I think, compounded the fact there were just more people there generally because there wasn't, I mean, Hall H was dead for most of the weekend. People needed somewhere to go. And so it just became busier. That being said, I mean, if we spend actually most of our convention in the exhibitor hall or in offsites, like in terms of panels, it was only the panels that we hosted that I went to. I didn't go to any panels this time.
We went to four. So
I went to the one that we were all on.
Well, why don't we start with that one first, I guess, since we're getting into Friday anyway, because our panel was on Friday, but it was afternoon, actually, if I recall. We had a nice time for the podcasting 101 to get like the maximum amount of people in there. And there was a good amount of people there.
Yeah. Yeah, there really was. Yeah, I think it was at 1 o'clock, if I remember correctly. There were probably more people at this one than there have been at most of the Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire slash, I guess, last year House of the Dragon ones that we've done. It was neat. And people were really interactive in the panel too, and had a lot of actually really good questions. So that was cool.
We also had the dog fight apparently that was going on outside. So I kept making comments. You'll hear comments on that, or you may even hear the barking.
Yeah, I actually already posted the recording on my podcast, the Geek Saga podcast, and I edited out and fiddled with the volume and stuff as much as I could. But I did actually leave some of the dogfight stuff in there simply because it was so hilarious. it was a little bit frustrating,
right?
And whatnot while we were in there trying to speak and everything, but it was still, honestly, it's a memory I will carry with me.
Yeah, you don't forget. And I guess I'll give a shout out to our co-host Varun Gupta that joined us at the last minute because we lost a few people for the podcasting panel. He was great, great guy to have on there. And it was really, I mean, because it was him and then it was the three of us. So it was really just like one of our podcasts here where we all knew each other and he kind of fit in well. And it was just very a relaxed chat. Like, how was your experience, John, first time being a panelist?
So I had a little bit of imposter syndrome in the fact that while I'm talking about podcasting, I'm not really doing any of the technical stuff on the podcasting. So I had a little bit of an imposter. So I tried to think about what podcasting has meant to me, the friendships I've made, and tried to keep it for, you know, why I podcast, what I get out of podcasting, and rather than dealing with the technical stuff, which you and Tara are much more familiar with. I must admit, I didn't even notice the dogs, so I must have been oblivious at that time. I didn't hear them at all, so I must have just been focused. Anyway, my wife and daughter said I didn't embarrass myself, so from that perspective, I'm great.
Well, the listeners will be the judge of that. They'll be able to listen to. But I think you did well, and I think that it was one of the better ones. Like, it was one of the more fun panels. We had good questions, and I thought it went well. This is the second year that they've approved that panel, so even if I may or may not attend next year, but I'll apply for it again if you guys want to. If I get it, be one of the main hosts again. Like, you see,
of course.
Let's keep it going. You know, we got to keep the tradition of it going. Especially if we don't know when House of the Dragon is released.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised they didn't do a House of the Dragon panel for you.
I think it's just because the show wasn't coming out for the next season. Did they have another? Did they even have a House of the Dragon panel there?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I looked. I didn't see any fan panels or. Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that they didn't have, you know, an actual panel for the show with actors and stuff for obvious reasons, but I don't think there was ever going to be one even prior to the strike. But yeah, no, there wasn't even another fan panel. And I mean, I get that the show isn't coming out next year, but when we did our panel last year, the show hadn't happened yet. So it feels like a year, you know, less than a year later, it would have been a good time to have a discussion about it. I mean, we're doing one at Dragon Con next week, like a whole House of the Dragon review panel. And it was airing during Dragon Con last year. So I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe they just didn't have room, but my real question is, was the Lost panel the Lost podcast fan panel still a thing? Because if they're still getting a panel and we didn't get House of the Dragon, then maybe we need to talk to somebody. Well,
I don't remember seeing them on the list. I may have missed it. I'll have to go double check. On the other hand, with Hall H not having much content in other places, you think they had more room generally. That's the last barrier, I guess. Are we ever going to make it into the main convention area?
Yeah, seriously.
Because, we won't have dogfights over there.
I think, honestly, the way to make it into the main convention area is to not apply as a podcast. I think that's literally the only way to do it.
Yeah, but I don't really apply as a podcast, though. I think that I tried avoiding that for many of my mm-hmm. panels, but they kind of just, it's almost like, well, you want this or not? I'm like, I'll take it. I'm not going to not do it, right? But they kind of slot us there. I mean, the podcasting 101, you can't avoid that. But like the other ones, I don't really mention the podcast at all, but they already know us. And it's just like, you know, I've tried it. Like, I've tried to say, like, I want to get there and stuff. Like, I'd rather go there. Especially, imagine when we were doing our Game of Thrones panels like 3 or 4 years ago when the show was on. Like, if they'd given us a big room over in there, we would have had like 1,000 people. We would have had 1,000 people because nobody wants to walk all the way. I mean, it was surprised you get like 150 over here. Like, that's a huge dedication to walk all the way over to the library. But they just didn't do that. Well, okay. Well, I mean, we'll have a smaller panel. But yeah, one day I'd like to get over there. I mean, my friend did the Orville panel. They were able to get that. They put them in one of the Manchester Hyatt or one of the other buildings. So they didn't even get there either. But at least it's closer to the convention. It's easier to walk across the street than to go there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's not like a super long or hard walk to get to the library, but it's just enough out of the way. And I actually, when I went to the Jurassic Park thing, which I'll talk about eventually, it's just enough out of the way that I get it. People don't want to trek over there. And particularly this year, the dogfights outside, it was because there was basically a camp right there. I can't imagine we were the only panel that had the issue with the constant interruptions of dog fighting. Mm-hmm. I don't think the dogs are actually fighting. I think they were getting worked up and barking at people walking by and stuff. And I don't, if you don't have dogs, my dogs will do that too. They work each other up and then they kind of get snarly with each other, but they're best friends. So, I mean, these dogs could have all been friendly dogs, but they were getting over the top about all these people walking by, and it was very interrupting of our panel.
Yeah, it's just not an ideal location. I mean, it's just farther away, especially when there's crowds. It's hard to get there. And as you said, like, especially with dogs, it's just not an ideal place to be. I mean, the facility itself, it's great, of course. But yeah, it would be great to be closer there. We'll keep trying, but we don't. Well, at least we'll still take it. It's still like being a panelist. We still enjoy it. But it's what's funny is, so I mean, we might as well kind of just cover both panels that I did in this kind of segment before we move on, is I applied for a bunch of other panels, like various topics, and then the one that they took, but I guess it's kind of maybe a hot topic right now, is the one that's on Korean pop culture, because I guess there's lots of shows and stuff like that. So that was the one they selected out of like the 5 or 6 panels I applied. And so I did that on Saturday with some people that are more experts in that area on K-pop and whatnot. And it was fun. Like the people there really enjoyed the panel. We enjoyed it. And I might maybe put that one on the BOK, Basketball Kingsway episode. That was on Saturday at 4 p.m. So that was a nice time there too. And we had a good showing. So that was it for the panels that we did. I think we can kind of go into offsites in Jurassic Park, but maybe first, actually, because it was earlier on in Thursday, we'll talk about pinball, because you know how it is, Tara in particular, right? I guess John as well, you get some of the emails. So you get all these emails before Comic-Con of various things you can sign up for, right? Like, you know, different interviews or offsites or events. And one of the things is that, Stern Pinball, if you're interested to get like a press experience with Stern Pinball, we said, yeah, okay, we'll try it out. And we signed up with that with Megan at Stern Pinball. And then I invited John, who was there on Thursday, and I didn't know John actually has a whole history of pinball. So, John, let us know.
my father grew up in New York City, and pinball was popular when he was young, and he introduced me to it. And I used to play pinball all the time as a kid and into teenage years, specifically on the streets of Times Square. We would – back when I was a free roam child, I would be 10, 11, 12 years old. I would take the train into Manhattan with my friends. We'd walk the 5 blocks to Times Square. I'd play pinball. And then I would usually meet my grandfather for dinner. So because his office was near there, and then we'd take the train back. So I've played pinball most of my life, not as much recently. At one point, I thought about buying a pinball machine. I never did. It takes up a lot of room. But pinball's come a long way since I played it, and the machine they showed us was Venom, and it was the first. It just came out, and it is. So they sort of made it as a legacy game, and you can use a barcode and scan your ID in, and you can keep track of your characters as you progress while you play this pinball machine. I think the concept is really cool. I have not actually tried to do the legacy game. I did ironically see the Venom pinball machine for the first time when I was at Gen Con. When I walked into a bar, they happened to have a brand new Venom machine there. So I thought that was interesting because it's only a few weeks old. But so that's my history of pinball, and meeting the designer and talking to him about the mechanics of how things have changed from when I was a kid. There were a lot of what we would call drop targets, where you'd hit the target and it would drop into the base of the machine. And once you hit all the drop targets, it would reset. And the goal was to, of course, knock down the drop targets, sometimes in a specific order. Now it's much more. The targets are still there, and they light up, but they've gone away from the drop targets. But what has increased exponentially is the use of multi-ball, and this machine had so many balls going at once, it was almost I was almost getting dizzy trying to keep them in play.
Well, I mean, one of the cool parts, as you mentioned, is basically you can go to any machine of that type around the world, and if you log in, your points and your levels are saved. So you're not tied to that one machine. You know, like George and Seinfeld had that one machine that only had a score. You can use it on any machine and that kind of thing. So it's kind of cool. Ashley's here. Is she? I don't know if your mic works, Ashley, or you're just listening. And the last time we
we hear you.
My phone.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay. Yeah, trying to sign in. I managed to lock myself out of not one but two emails and have to re-download Skype. So sorry that took so long.
Okay, any comments on what you've heard so far, Ashley?
I have heard the tail end of many things, so no.
Okay, cool. Okay, so we're going to talk about Junji Ito because that's what we did next that day, and it's the first of the offsite. So I've sent the link to it. And in fact, so he was one of the kind of featured artists at and creators at Comic-Con. They had various panels with him, and then they had this exhibition in the Marriott, actually. And so John and I went there, and Anna as well, right? Was there.
Yeah.
So what did you think of it, John?
I thought the art was really, really cool. It is definitely not my cup of tea. I am not a horror guy, and this was definitely a horror comic or a horror manga. But I was intrigued enough to plan to read it at some point.
I did read the sample they gave us. They gave us a little sample.
Familiar with any of you guys familiar with the work?
Not before I saw his work there. Were you familiar with him before?
Oh yeah. So well known. So what was it? Was it like a new one, or was it like displaying like his work from the past?
Displaying the work from the past.
Got a lot.
Yeah, like they had the art exhibit had various, you know, artwork from that for his various works there. Like art gallery style.
Yeah, all originals. I mean, it wasn't just prints. It was the original drawings that he
did
to make.
The original ones were there. Yeah. And then he had various panels and signings and stuff. So he was like involved quite a bit. Like he was one of the people showcased at Com. And I think he actually won the Inkpot Award as well. So, you know, every year they have a couple of artists like that where they bring over and put a spotlight on him. So like Louis Royo was there some years ago when I met him there. So this year was Junji's turn, and so I hadn't been aware of him. But if you go to any bookstore now that has manga, if you look there, his work is there now too. They're promoting him again, but it's mostly his old work that's been republished. Yeah.
Ashley, can you give a little description of what his stuff is like?
It is horror, but it's kind of like psychological, but also disturbing. Like the one that I always like think of a lot is the one with the holes and the, that it's just your shape, and it's just the way that it just kind of draws your mind. Like it's horror that really just kind of makes you think. Like it's just like, I don't know how to describe it.
Really. No, I think you describe it quite well. It's common. It's not just gore. You know, there is gore in it. It's bloody, but the psychological horror is there as well, and that's the one that hits the most, really. Because especially with manga, it's actually easier to handle. I handled manga easier for the gore, but the psychological stuff is deep.
Yeah, and it really plays kind of on the unknown and building suspense too. It's still. I don't know.
Well, he's certainly got quite a spotlight.
I'm not like someone who's super into him. I'm aware, and I've seen a lot of the art and stuff, and I've been disturbed enough to be like, nope, you know what? I don't need to read this because it's
probably yes, exactly. We got enough horrors out there. We don't really need this one. But for the people that are big fans of him, they would have had a great time because he had so many panels. In fact, he even had a panel at the library. So, like that, he was all over the place. And we walked past him one of the days. I think is him and his entourage were coming out of this restaurant or something. And I was like, that's got to be him. I recognize him from the.
Yeah, but how do you describe horror? No, I'm looking at the article you sent. I can't believe it's the original work they had there. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are like famous.
All right, so that's Junji Ito. And then I guess we'll move on to Jurassic Park. And Tara, how was there? We'll start with you. I also went there too, but how did you find Jurassic Park, the offsite?
I really enjoyed it. It was a little bit, you know, off the beaten path because as we were talking about before, our panels at the library, and it was pretty far beyond that. I mean, I think, what was it, like six blocks maybe? I was, being as I was there by myself, it was nice that we had, oh my gosh, friends of your podcast from the panel who've also, one of them has also been to Ice and Fire Con, and I am blanking on his name and I feel so bad right now. He wanted to take his son to,
Adam.
Yes, Adam, thank you. To the Jurassic Park installation. And I was like, hey, if you guys want to go now, do you want to walk over together? So I had people to walk over there with. And then I, being there as press, I was able to kind of get almost right in. I think I waited about 10 minutes at most. I don't even know if it was that long. And so the experience itself was really cool. I mean, it was just basically walking through scenes from the movies, you know, and first you could sit on a rock and have the Dilophosaurus blow steam at you, and then you could sit on the toilet with the T-Rex roaring at you, and then there was the raptor in the kitchen. The one thing, when my party that was in there, I call it my party as if I knew these people, I didn't, but the group that I was with that was in there, we got stuck in the T-Rex area for like really long. And they kept saying, oh, they haven't moved yet. So they finally move us to the next one, which I'm pretty sure was the Raptor one. And we were there for enough time for people to get pictures and stuff. But then they rushed us out after that. So there were the power block that Ellie Sattler has to turn the power back on and stuff. And we just, I basically was able to take snap a picture as I walked by it. There was no one there to take my picture. It was super quick after the Raptor thing, cause they were trying to push groups through, which I understand. I have no idea what happened with the group before us that we got stuck in the T-Rex thing it got to the point where it was awkward for at least 5 minutes, probably longer, because they kept asking if more people wanted to take pictures, and everybody's like, yeah, we kind of already have. But it was really, really cool. And of course, at the end, you got free dino nuggets, which are literally just frozen chicken nuggets, but Jurassic Park branded. They tasted exactly like every other frozen dino nugget I've ever had. But listen, I will take my free six pack or whatever it was of dino nuggets and not have to buy lunch.
Dinosaurs, right?
Yeah. Which came first, the chicken or the dinosaur? But yeah, so and they also had I'm gonna call it bottled quote unquote water.
Yeah.
But it was boxed water, really, I guess is what you'd probably call it. So they had water there and they had all these different dipping sauces for the dino nuggets that were actually really good. I couldn't tell you what they all were, but they were actual, one was like a spicy honey and I don't remember what the other ones were, but they were all really good. And then they had a little store, but they weren't actually selling anything. It was just a place where they could display the new 30 year anniversary products. And they had QR codes so you could scan those and it would take you right to the Amazon link if you wanted to buy them. So it was, I mean, I really, listen, I'm a huge Jurassic Park fan. So I was super excited that I got to go to this and not have to wait in a crazy long line. There were a couple guys there that were Lego vloggers, I guess you could call them. They had this, I think it's a really, really popular Lego channel on YouTube. And so I talked to them a little bit while we were waiting the few minutes to get in. And then we all left at the same time. And I was like, hey, I don't really know you guys, but I'm going to walk with you on the way back if that's okay, because I'm by myself and it's not the safest seeming area. So, other than it being really off the beaten path, it was a lot of fun and I'm super glad I got to go.
Yeah, it was a really good experience for getting the photos. And now that you mentioned, actually, I don't think we took photos at the power block part either. Like, it was almost like that was not, they didn't really expect to take individual photos there. I don't think we have a photo of that one. I liked getting the items as well, because you can kind of see what they are. If you like them, then you can order it to home with the Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to lug it home with the rest of the stuff that you get at the convention. So it was a good experience. I'll also give a shout out to Friends of Comic-Con, the forum and the group of people, because that's how I got tickets for that, and in general, like, learned a lot about what was going on. It's just the group there is just the greatest group ever if you want to get to know people at Comic Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I agree.
You as well. You introduced me to them, I think, years ago, actually. So
yeah, I think I told you about them. Yeah. So
okay. So then some other offsites I'm thinking that I went to. Did you go to Paramount, Tara? Offsite?
Yes, yeah, I did actually. I got super lucky. One of my friends, Orion, hooked me up hardcore. We got in with VIP wristbands. So I did that on Friday evening, actually. I want to say we went in at like 5-ish or so. And so, yeah, I got to do the whole thing because we were there kind of as like press. Technically, they cleared the whole place out after X amount of time to let the next group of people in that had reservations. But there were like us and a couple other small groups of people that were there as press that came in a little later. So we were all able to stay, which means I actually got to do, like, I got one of the good burgers. I got to do the 1923 quote unquote speakeasy, where you could go in and get a free drink if you had drink tickets left, and they took like a black and white photo of you. That was really cool. And then actually, did the little walkthrough at the Yellow Jackets thing, and they had like a test, like an aptitude test sort of thing that you could do for some new show that they were promoting. I can't remember what it was called. It was like a spy show. And then they had a SpongeBob thing that was mostly just a photo op area, but they took your picture with a Polaroid and you could get it put into a little magnetic or cardboard frame. I can't remember if it was magnetic. I feel like it might have been, but I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, the Paramount thing, it was kind of all over the place. I didn't do the Star Trek caricature stuff because, I mean, I'm not really a Star Trek fan. Not that I do like Strange New Worlds a lot, but I'm not a big enough Star Trek fan that I was going to wait in the line for the caricatures. So I didn't, that was the only thing in the Paramount Plus Lodge that I didn't do, but it was really cool, even though it was a bit all over the place and eclectic, let's say.
Free experience. You get the food and the drinks, but I'm glad that you were able to try out those various things, because for us, it was quite busy. We didn't really bother to get any
the caricatures. They would draw a caricature of you?
Yeah.
In a Star Trek uniform?
As a Klingon or something like that.
By the way, the show is Lioness you're thinking of. It's Taylor Sheridan's new show. Okay. Created Yellowstone in 1883 and 1923.
Oh, okay. I mean, I love Yellowstone in 1883 and 1923. I don't really know if I care to watch a current time spy show, though. Although I say that, but there's going to be so little TV to watch in the near future. Who knows? Maybe I will.
Well, his mob show with Tulsa King is a total guilty pleasure, but it's fun. And that has Sylvester Stallone in it. So I've liked everything he's done, so I'll probably eventually watch this.
I have two more things I want to cover on my list. One I didn't get to go to was Neopets, because I got to go to a different thing I'll talk about. But, John, you went to the Neopets party. How was that?
Well, it was an interesting experience actually talking to one of the Neopet fanatics in line who grew up playing Neopets and now is, you know, in her 40s or late 30s, and she thinks she's one of the younger people still playing Neopets. So that was interesting. They gave us some swag. They fed us some food. I must admit we didn't really stay for the speech because Tara had somewhere to go and we had somewhere to go and we went.
Were you at the party too, Tara? You also went to the Neopets.
Yes, yeah, you couldn't go last minute.
That's right. John,
you forwarded me your thing. So yeah, I went. Same thing. It's another thing that was like a little bit off the beaten path. So, but I mean, when we got in, because of course we got in as VIP or whatever as press, we didn't have to wait in line. We walked right in, and we got in like a half an hour or something early. But the line was crazy. They said there were people that had been waiting there since like first thing that morning or maybe even longer. So that was, I don't really even know that much about Neopets or what it is. So, I mean, it was a really cool setup. We had a really nice view of San Diego. They had the cool little light up Neopet sign at the top of the parking garage. That was really pretty. Like, I know that sounds weird because it was at the top of a parking garage, but it was cool to have that with like the background of San Diego. And it was around like a little before sunset time, so the sky looked really nice, you know. So it was a really neat location for all of that. And like Jonathan said, they had a bunch of food and everything. But yeah, so I don't really know anything about Neopets, but it was still like a cool thing to experience once, I guess.
I wish my daughter was here because she could actually talk about Neopets because she used to play it as a kid. The thing that I did enjoy about the Neopets experience was the views we got were great from the rooftop that it was held at. So you got some nice views of San Diego. And
didn't the company buy pizza for the people online?
Yeah, so that was the other thing. They were, the company at least was pretty classy for the people online who had been waiting all day. They bought them. They had pizzas delivered and were feeding the people who had waited there for hours and hours and hours pizza. So I thought that was pretty classy.
It's a good microcosm of a couple things. For the people who are really into a particular thing, like Neopets, that's like their mega event. They can enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But also for us, it's like part of the game of going to Comic-Con is like, how can I get in as press or VIP? I'm not going to wait in lines anymore for hours and hours. It's like, what can I do to get in is what we do, which is good. I mean, remember the Orville experience a few years ago?
The Orville was awesome. Gosh.
Yeah.
Talking to the costume designer of the Orville for like an hour was great.
Both years that Ashley went were, and I'm sure Ashley, you can weigh in on this. Mm. Both years that Ashley went, we were choice at getting into things.
I still remember you getting us into the Game of Thrones experience. I mean, and that was, and then finding out we're on TV a few weeks later was.
Oh, shoot. I missed that one.
You missed the Game of Thrones experience, or you missed that we were on TV?
Both. Yeah, I don't remember what it was. I might have had other things going on to be able to get in. I did House of the Dragon last year. I was able to get into that thanks to a friend, but I never did one of the Game of Thrones ones. But yeah, I didn't know you guys got on TV.
So I'll give you a rehash of that. So Amin got us in. And we were, you know, going through similar to like Jurassic Park.
And Sam was there too, I think, right? It was all Sam.
Sam, Talia, Anna, you and I, yeah. And we were going through each section, and they had we got to sit on the Iron Throne, and then we got to stand by the map that was on Dragonstone and other things. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, we're home watching Game of Thrones. And was it right before the episode or right after the episode for the sneak preview of the next episode? I can't remember. Game of Thrones is at Comic-Con, and my daughter is like, oh my God, that's you and Amin. And and then like 2 seconds later, it's like, oh my God, that's me. And they have her sitting on the Iron Throne. And within 30 seconds of this happening, I had 3 text messages from people. It's like, we just saw you on TV.
That's so cool.
It's like it's one of those only at Comic-Con things, right? Like it's you go there and then suddenly you're on TV. Okay, so what's the other thing I wanted to cover? You know Funko Fun Days. Have you heard of that event?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I went to that. It was outdoors, actually, for the first time. And it was good overall, but there was 2 things that were a fiasco. The first is usually they have a very good buffet or food set up for that. And they literally gave, like, the worst food ever this time. No buffet, just, like, a packed sandwich that's, like, worse than you would get in, like, elementary school.
I heard about this. I heard people were comparing it to Fire Festival.
The Funko Fire Festival. It was basically that kind of food. That was the food. It was like, come on, you're spending like 200 plus on this thing and that's your dinner. So that was part of it. And the other part, I remember, for people who collect Funkos or the collectibles, like accuracy is very important in terms of the numbers and whatnot. Like, you know, if it says there's only 2,000 or 1,000 or whatever, it needs to be accurate, right? Well, there was various items they gave out there that were supposed to be 250s, and some people were selling them quickly, like, for a lot of money there. And then it turns out it wasn't 250. They're actually, like, another 250 or another 500 they sold online. Like, this is inaccurate. And so it was like, the whole fiasco that came out afterward. Funko had to apologize for it and all that stuff. And so those 2 things were kind of, like, the downsides to the event.
Yeah, I the only other things I did were I did get into the freebie party on Friday night. Again, my same friend Orion, who helped me get into the Paramount Plus Lodge, he helped me get into the freebie party. And so that was, we didn't stay for super long, I didn't stay for super long, maybe like an hour, hour and a half. But it was fun. Like, they had a decent DJ and you could get a couple drinks included. And then after that you had to pay, and they had some contests that you could participate in. I wasn't there long enough to participate in any of them, but I know he did. He won a t-shirt. And then after that, I met up with a friend of mine from the East Coast who is he does a million things, but he actually was part of he helped write the Wolverine Origins comics/graphic novels. So he actually has won an Eisner Award. So I left the freebie thing to go hang out with him at the Eisner Award winner party at the Hilton. So that was pretty cool.
That's great. Have you ever actually been to the fandom party before? I've you tried to get in that party a few times, but
no. Yeah. Which one is that?
It's just a fandom party. I think it's on Thursday. It's really famous. Like it's supposed to be the best. You know, fan related, like there's 2 big parties at Comic-Con. There's Entertainment Tonight, which are all the actors go to and stuff. And then the fandom is the other one. That's like the big one equivalent, but that's more just for general people. Of course, actors and whatever might go to that as well. But that's the one that everyone tries to get into. I tried to get into it because we were doing that panel on Korean pop culture, including K-pop, and they were actually debuting a Korean K-pop group there. So then I was like, hey, you know, we can talk about our panel. Let us in. And they said, no. Although some of the panelists actually did get in, but that was through their media contacts, so they already had gotten through work to that, but I didn't get in to it. So
yeah, I wonder if there were even that many actors there this year at all. I mean, I guess some of them might have gone to just go to the parties and stuff, but they had to be real careful with
what activities they're allowed to go to. Yeah,
there were a few of the what I would call the B and C list actors were actually there picketing.
Interesting.
And I think Mike Coulter was one of them that we saw. But yeah, so there are a few of them picketing. But other than that, there was nothing. I mean, I think Hall H was just the Bollywood. I didn't go, but I heard that there was this really good and interesting Bollywood science fiction movie coming out, or fantasy movie that's coming out. And they were the one thing in Hall H. And
right, I did hear about that was quite popular. But I guess that's the overall question. Given the actor strike and the writer strike, how did you feel Comic-Con overall? Like, did you feel like there was something missing, or you were happy with it overall? Like, what do you think?
Well, it didn't impact me much at all because I've never even tried to think about going into Hall H. I guess we did often go to like Hall 20, which had some of what I would say the B-list shows, like the 100 panel was in there, and the not Gotham, but the Pennyworth panel was in like room 20, and those types of panels weren't there this year. But to be honest, this year we still went to a number of panels that were more lit. We just stuck with the literary ones that we went to, if we went to a panel at all, and then did a few more just San Diego things because, you know, I don't get out to San Diego that much. So we did a little less convention and a little bit more family time in San Diego.
I'm glad you did, because I've been to San Diego outside of Comic-Con, and there was really some – it's such a nice city. There's some really fun stuff to do and things to see out there.
It is. It's got so many. You got the zoo. You got SeaWorld. You got Balboa Park. Like, it is something that – if you can fit into your visit there. I've done that in the past, where I go there before Comic-Con starts.
The Midway is really interesting. We went up to La Jolla and saw the sea lions.
And you went to that was a restaurant, the Steam Piggy, right?
Oh, that was awesome. That was one of the best restaurants I've eaten in a long time, the Steamy Piggy, yeah. Highly recommend, but that's off the beaten path. That's right. Like nowhere near the convention center. That's a pretty long Uber ride away.
Was that where you guys went on Saturday night?
I think that's where we went Friday night.
Or Friday night. Sorry, that's what I meant. Friday night. Yeah.
Yeah. Saturday night we went to Punchbowl Social. Yeah, mm-hmm. And karaoke.
On Sunday, I went to the Friends of Comic-Con dinner. They always have that at the last like bit of Comic-Con, and that was good as well, as usual. So I give that shout out.
Do they still do the like swag exchange?
They do. It's massive. We actually took a lot of swag there because we had a lot of stuff. Even though we took multiple suitcases, you have this massive table of swag. It definitely is one of the highlights of that event for sure.
It's the one thing I regret about not being able to stay Sunday night for I think the last time I stayed actually for Sunday night was 2015, maybe. I think it was 2015. No, maybe 2017. But I didn't that 2017 I didn't go to it because Game of Thrones was airing. So we all went back to the friends that I was staying with, we all went back to the room to watch Game of Thrones.
No, for many years, I would always miss that Sunday. I'd be traveling and whatnot. But the last few times, it was definitely – I'm glad that we stayed and went to it.
No, yeah, the Friends of Comic-Con is really, really great. Like you said, they're everybody in there – I mean, I've never had a bad experience. I'm sure there's bad actors in every group. But every time I've, you know, joined in on stuff with them and everything, I've had a really, really good time.
One final comment I had, I need to do our annual check. Any horror experiences with baby buggies in the exhibitor hall or whatnot? Or you avoided mostly it anyway?
I did, yeah. So I didn't have any horrible experiences with that. I did actually on Friday afternoon after the Jurassic Park thing, I went over to the exhibitor hall to meet up with the same friend that I went to the Eisner thing with later that night. I just sat down at his booth to chat with him for a while. And one of our mutual friends from Dragon Con was there with her service dog, who's like actually a legitimate service dog. Her name is Sydney, the service dog. If you find her on Instagram, I think it's at Sydney DSD, and she cosplays. Jonathan, I know you saw her. She was in a cloak, a black cloak, and carrying a red lightsaber around on Friday. Yeah. But I know them from Dragon Con and actually have seen them at Disney races too, weirdly enough. But she was saying that they had a lot of problems with fake service dogs. So not so much. I think she said she did actually bring up getting practically run over, or maybe Sydney almost got practically run over by somebody pushing a stroller, but it wasn't me directly. So don't necessarily quote me on that, but I'm fairly certain she mentioned it. But she was complaining about at one point she actually had to go say something to security because somebody with their supposed service dog, their dog almost attacked hers. So
like there's a lot of people with little tiny dogs in there that are going to be like,
yeah,
why would you ever, first of all, you're not even supposed to have them generally. I doubt, and second, it's just not safe for them. Like it was little teacup, like the little small ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's like hell for them. They're like trying to avoid this trampling like crowd around there. And then we saw like this mega stroller which was like double sided, and sometimes they had only items in there, no kids. Sometimes there's a couple of board kids in there and then items on top of them just barreling through the window.
They're just buried in slag. Shut up, kids. We got to put our stuff in your cart, stroller, whatever.
One other thing I'll mention, because in the morning, especially when everyone's trying to get in quickly to get various items, right, because it sells out in various, it's always in the morning where people try and go quickly, and they always have this like thing in the background saying, do not run in the exhibitor hall, like this audio, and everyone's like running around like crazy, and the guards are like, don't run. And then somebody like zooms by in their mobility scooter at full speed saying, I'm not running. <It's> just... it's just this mad rush that you have. That's what I mean. There's a good side to it and a bad side to it. If you go to a more relaxed convention elsewhere, you don't have that mad rush. People are like, I gotta get there before the exclusive runs out, because you know it's not gonna run out to the other conventions. But in this one, they only have a limited amount that only is sold there. Well, thank you both, and thank you Ashley for being there, for patiently listening in even with the mic issues. It's good to have you.
I did want to mention one thing. Sure. We did go to the Lore Olympus panel, and that was really good. I had never heard of it before. Apparently, my daughter reads it, and Lydia is a fanatic about it, and she came as the main character, and she got to get her. They had a big photo shoot of everyone who came in costume into that panel, so that was nice. That was a good panel.
Yes, I always
She's
have to
be at DragonCon in that. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I saw pictures. It looked really good. I'm always applauding the people who cosplay at Comic-Con. I did it my very first year. Never again.
Too hot and busy. I mean, if you're in a nearby hotel, it helps, certainly, because then you can get inside quickly.
Tara, yeah. Why is it any different than cosplaying at DragonCon?
Oh, no, the heat is... The heat is whatever, honestly. The years it's been hot at Comic-Con, and it actually was really hot there the first year I went, but it's not usually as hot there as it is at DragonCon. It's not so much the heat. It's more the trekking. It's so much walking. So much of it, unless you're just staying in the convention center, isn't inside. And just being out on the streets and I don't know. Dragon Con is when you're in Atlanta for Dragon Con, almost everybody is cosplaying, right, Ashley?
Yeah, well, that's certainly true.
So, and also it's very easy to wear a cosplay and never go outside, particularly if you're staying in the big three hotels. But even if you're not, you could Uber over from wherever you're staying, Uber Lyft over from wherever you're staying, and you could stay in those big three hotels, the Hyatt, Marriott, and Hilton. They're all attached by bridges, indoor, like enclosed bridges that go over the street. And you don't have to be out in the seriously oppressive heat unless you really want to, I guess, for a photo shoot or something. So, I mean, and also just... I guess for me, it was more just like the crazy amount of walking around I did that first year. I regretted wearing cosplays. And I think when Ashley came in her first year, I was like, I mean, listen, if you really want to cosplay, but I ain't doing it. Nobody I know, like nobody I'm friends with is doing it. We're going to bring cute clothes and go out to bars and walk around and be comfortable during the day, and now my dogs are barking, so it's almost like
it's funny.
I don't know if you can hear my dogs barking, but I feel like I've got PTSD from our panel.
It feels like a different kind of fandom culture.
Yeah,
and so that makes sense. Comic-Con, you're kind of weird if you're not in costume, at least, like, somewhat.
Well, also, Comic-Con, you can't really, exhibitor hall's too busy, and the panels, you can only walk along that outside stretch. Like, there's not really much you can do with it, really. Like,
Comic-Con was the only convention that Talia, my daughter, has cosplayed in. So, she went as Zatanna the 1 year she did it.
I think that was 2017. I remember that.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. Check us out on podcast.icefire.com, on Facebook and Twitter, and our Discord. And we'll see you next time. Great. Thank you. Thanks, Tara, John, Ashley. Good to have you back.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't have much to add, and I had so many computer issues.
No problem. Hopefully you can get, you'll have time to fix it for whatever our next, we don't record that often anyway, so we can.
Well, you're still doing the longest reread, right?
That's right. We're pacing ourselves to George's writing speed, so that's
right. We saw George's writing pace and took it personally.
Yeah, did you edit generally the podcasting episode, like clean up stuff, or maybe I can make use of some of your record? If you
were if I can find a way to share it with you, because I don't, it's going to depend on the file size. But yeah, I didn't do a ton of editing, but
you might have done a little bit of like,
I tried to fix volume where I could, and I tried, like I said, I cut out some of like blank spaces and stuff. So I will try to do it tonight. I can't promise anything.
Oh, no rush. I'm not going to get this one out for some time.
Okay. Yeah. I still have to pack for Dragon Con, and I fly out tomorrow. So, all right. You guys have a good night.
Have a good time.
Ashley, I'll see you in a few days.
And I'm sorry I'm missing Dragon Con.
I'm so sad you guys aren't going to be there. It was so freaking fun having you there last year.
Yeah. All right. We'll have a drink for you.
Thank you.
All right, y'all have a good night.
And please post everything so I can live vicariously through your posts.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
All right, you guys have a good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. All right, so we're good to start. Thanks for coming, everybody. We're having a good Comic-Con. So what we're going to do is just do a little intro. We'll have each panelist up here, and then we'll kind of get the outline of what we're covering today for the podcasting panel. So first, my name is Amin. I'm a podcaster from Podcast of Ice and Fire. I also do Bastards of Kingsbury. So we started doing Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones stuff, and we do anime, manga, all kind of convention stuff. So we'll start with Tara. You can introduce yourself and what's your podcast and everything.
Hi, I'm Tara. I run Geek Saga Entertainment, which the two podcasts we have right now is a very spotty one called the Geek Saga Podcast, and then our regular genre lit podcast, which is Sagas and Sass.
Yeah, and I'm Varun Gupta. I am a BI engineer for the programming strategy team over at Amazon Prime Video, but in my free time, I do a ton of podcasts about anime and manga. The biggest one is the Demon Slayer podcast, where we talk about the anime and manga Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba. Then our other like really nice one that I love is Saturday Night Shogi, where we talk about the manga publisher Shogakukan.
I'm Jonathan Egan. I'm a principal in Sagas and Sass with Terra. I've also participated in Vassals of the Kingsbrave, which is a spinoff of a podcast of Ice and Fire that started from the original forums community, which is now on Discord. And we basically, as a group, try to determine what sort of genre or media we want to cover, and a subset of us all set up a podcast to do it, or times to do it.
Well, this is really going to be an interactive panel, so if you see a particular topic and you have a question related to it, feel free to come up to the mic here and ask a question. You don't have to wait till the end. You can ask a question during the course of the panel. So to get us started, let's just go into choosing a podcast topic and see how did you get into the podcast you did. For us, the podcast of Ice and Fire, we started in 2008 because we were waiting for George R. R. Martin to write the next book, which was still doing a book. He got ahead by a book or two by then. So we wanted to do something to fill the time, so we started doing, podcasting was getting big around then, so we did an Ice and Fire podcast. We started with that and then kind of spin off and started doing the other mediums like anime and manga. So how did everybody else get into podcasting, and how do you choose your topic?
So I originally got into podcasting through a means of podcast of Ice and Fire. Listening to it, I used to cook my dinners to his podcasts. Then eventually I met him at a convention, and he invited me onto the podcast of Ice and Fire, which then evolved to the Vassal of the Kingsgrave, and then I met Tara, and she wanted me basically to start a new literary podcast, and I jumped at the opportunity because I needed to read more. So while I did not initiate any of them, I was lucky enough to find this community and build a series of friendships through this community.
For me, I was kind of roped into podcasting through my older sibling. And they do a podcast called Manga Mavericks, where they talk about the manga industry. So I started guest hosting on that. And then I was like, oh, I really like this. I'm going to try doing it by myself with just some friends that I had. And then we realized that we kept talking about other topics, like, before recording. So it reached a point where we just started making, like, 4 or 5 podcasts at once, which is both really fun, but also a nightmare because that's a lot of editing.
Oh, God, I feel you. Trust me. I only have 2, so I don't know how you do that many. My first podcast, the Geek Saga podcast, the spotty one in terms of recording, that one came about because I had been speaking on a ton of panels at conventions for years, and I always recorded them, and I didn't really quite know what the point of recording them was if I wasn't going to share those recordings. So I started by going back to, I want to say I started it in early 2017. It was early 2018. So I went back to just the previous year's panels that I'd been on, the ones that were still timely and appropriate anyway, and took those recordings and did some minor editing, very minor editing. And so that's how it started, but it's kind of evolved into a podcast that does its own series of things at a time. So last year we did Hot D Takes, which was about House of the Dragon, where we took like 10 hot takes from each episode and like summarized the episode and stuff. And then currently, other than putting up random recordings from conventions, we're doing a series called 90s and Naughties Cringe Factor, where we rewatch like teen rom-coms from the 90s and early 2000s and talk about how terrible they really are. It's really hard to come up with 3 things we like about them, honestly. And then Sagas and Sass, that was a pandemic podcast. It really started out as a live webcast where I just kind of took the audio from the webcasts and slapped them into podcast form, but now we've gone strictly podcast. And as Jonathan said, it's a genre-lit podcast, so we cover usually just one series at a time. We're currently doing the Red Rising saga by Pierce Brown. That one evolved too, because it started out as just kind of, here's a brief summary, and then we're going to shoot the shit, excuse my language, for an hour or two. But now it's a lot more structured and super detailed, like summaries and discussion of the book.
Awesome, great. The topic of editing came up, which we'll get into a little bit later, but I do want to kind of highlight the difference between this. There's one level of podcasting where you just host and you podcast and you enjoy that. And then there are those who suffer as the editor. That's a different role. We'll get into that. Those who edit know what I'm talking about. So it's kind of 2 different levels of experience. So let's move on to finding hosts and co-hosts. If you want to not do it yourself, because there's a divide there. Like, the easier way to do it is if you do it with people you know already, either online or in person, because you already have chemistry. For us, it was harder. At that time, we didn't know a lot of people who were into the series, so we just met online and then we kind of formed the chemistry over time. So I'm just curious, how did you find your co-hosts, if you have any, and was it online? Did you know them already, or did you meet them online?
Well, I mean, Sagas and Sass is obvious. For that one, you know, we were deep in 2020, and my day job was very, very busy, and I needed something to, like, unwind that wasn't playing Red Dead Redemption. So I put up a post on Facebook like, hey, I need to read more and I'm looking for people who are interested in talking about book series. And we did the Grishaverse first, and the show was coming out in 2021, the first season. So I was like, I want to get these episodes out before this show comes out, you know? So I put a Facebook post up and it was all my friends. And honestly, with the Geek Saga one, that one's kind of all over the place. The current series that we've been doing, the Hot D Takes one, and then the 90s and Naughties one, it's the same co-host for each. He kind of just followed me from Hot D Takes into 90s and Naughties, because he's a really great co-host. But I found him kind of the same way. I was like, I want to do a House of the Dragon podcast, but I need my co-host to be somebody who has not read the books. So that's how I found that co-host. So yeah, it's always been people I've known. I mean, I've definitely been on podcasts with people I don't know, but honestly, I've been kind of in this industry, geek industry, for lack of a better term, for so long that I know a lot of people and I have a lot of friends who are interested in doing these sort of things. So it's made it kind of easy, much more easy than you guys had it.
Yeah, for me, I kind of met most of my co-hosts through Twitter before Twitter became the nightmare that it is right now. But yeah, I think, like, especially since I kind of cover, like, anime and manga news, the anime and manga news, like, community is, like, pretty closely knit, I feel. So I already knew, like, quite a few people that had been on podcasts before or were, like, interested in doing podcasts. So, like, for instance, for my Demon Slayer podcast, most of the people on there are people that I just talk to in my free time about Demon Slayer. So it kind of just made sense to record our conversations and just make it a bit more organized and then release it. Might as well make content out of it, everything we're talking about. And then for Saturday Night Shogi, one of my friends already was reporting a ton of news on Shogakukan manga on Twitter. And we wanted to kind of just get a bigger reach out there in like a different format. And so I talked to him about kind of just doing a podcast about it, and we just went from there and just planned out how we wanted to do our episodes. So I feel like I wouldn't necessarily do a podcast with strangers, because I personally don't really feel like I can get that exact chemistry with people right off the bat. But I think, like, I really like having these conversations with friends and making those into podcasts.
Not to, like, jump on, you know, Jonathan's turn, but I will say this, that, like, most of, other than Jonathan, really, and my friend Nami, who isn't currently doing Sagas and Sass with us, but is coming back soon, other than them, the two of them, the friend I do the Geek Saga stuff with, and my other friend Nick, I would say, like, barely more than acquaintances with them, and doing the podcast with them has made them some of my closest friends, which is really nice.
So as Tara mentioned, she sent out a Facebook invite, and I jumped on it, and with a little bit of announcement of false advertising, because it was originally, I want to do this Sagas and Sass podcast and start with the Red Rising series, which I was all gung-ho and excited about. And then it took 3 years plus to get to the Red Rising series as we did.
Listen,
the
he was taking forever
and,
with the
and,
books.
And then the Naomi Novak series of Temeraire after that, and on and on and on. But since I've been on that podcast, I've been far less active with the Vassals podcast. And I have, over the last few years, tried to get up a group of Vassals to discuss Babylon 5. And I've failed twice, and I'll probably try again soon, because I hear there's some new people on the Discord server who are interested in it. So maybe I can get a couple of Babylon 5 episodes.
Awesome. Our next topic will be, do you have a question? Yeah, come on. Yeah.
So I have a podcast right now with three people, and one of them is Lady. And my good friend and I, he's like, maybe we should bring in my girlfriend. Yeah, exactly. Is there a nice way? I mean, I know you have to be professional and honest with your partner and talk to them and whatnot, but...
I mean, honestly, that's not a situation I've been in with a podcast, but I ran Ice and Fire Con for a decade, and we have a small council, and I had put a rule out a couple years ago or so, I think, when my significant other was like, I mean, if you need a small council member, because we had a spot to fill, and I was like, I really don't think that's a good idea. So, like, honestly, I think just being professional about it and saying, like, hey, I think we need to have a rule, like, no significant others on the podcast, because, I mean, I don't even think you have to, like, couch it or give a reason. I think that's a professional rule to have, honestly, just no significant others, unless they're just guesting. But as a regular host.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking for any regular hosts.
Yeah.
So is there a benefit to maybe... He lives in Canada, I live in the US, and is there a benefit to, right now our third one is his friend that I brought in, and now we're all friends. So I'm wondering if there's a benefit to bringing in someone we don't know as our third, and like having that kind of banter, or if there's something about bringing in someone that both of us know, or maybe only one of us knows, like that kind of dynamic, if you have any experience with that.
So we actually had that experience where we often lost hosts. If you're going to bring somebody else, try them for a few episodes first. Kind of like an audition process with different people, and you can see who fits. And then make the final decision. And then your question, I think, a little bit broader. I mean, you gave a specific example of a specific other, but just like, how do you add a new host? How do you have everybody who's currently on it be happy with it? So it doesn't matter if it's a significant other or whatever. If you're not happy with it, then don't bring them on. So that can be your way to stop.
Thanks for your time.
So the next topic is planning episodes, whether how scripted it is. But I'm bringing it up as an example because we're going to go off script now. Because you mentioned a few things, I want to talk to that before we get into there. The first was just the relationships you form through podcasting, like with your podcasters, but also with your audience. I think it's really And a lot of times, people like John, you said, even your wife was listening while you were cooking, and getting to know me. Well, I didn't know them till I met them here. So it's kind of this interesting one-way relationship where your listeners get to know you and know your voice, and then suddenly they meet you, and you get to learn meet them then. So have you experienced that? And the other question I'm going to put to the panel is, I think we all have long-running podcasts, but I'm curious if you know anyone who's just on a short topic, because I don't think you need to jump in and do a podcast for years and years. You could just choose a 5 or 10 episode podcast, I think, and do that. So any thoughts on that as well?
I've never done short form, unless you count like the series that I do with the Geek Saga podcast. But in terms of like meeting listeners, again, mine kind of is like the opposite, where usually people come to my podcasts and webcasts from like me talking about them at conventions, honestly, with the exception of with the Geek Saga podcast. I do this year's the 7th year, I think, 6th or 7th year. Every year for over 5 years, we've been doing a what I call Drinkin' Con, which is a pre-Dragon Con webcast. It's actually a live webcast. I do turn it into a podcast, which is another messy editing story. But I've been doing that for years, and I have people come up to me at Dragon Con and be like, oh my gosh, I watched your Drinkin' Con podcast or webcast. That is so funny. So like, that's literally the only experience I've had. And it's a very like specific once a year niche. So
for me, I feel it's kind of weird, because like, we've had like interactions with people that are listening to our podcast. They're actually much closer to us than we expected. Like one of my co-hosts, they're like cousin, just found our podcast randomly and started actively listening to it. And then we found out, we're like, wait, what? How did you even know about this when we never even told you about it? So it's kind of funny when that happens, that you're reaching people that you didn't expect. And it's honestly kind of satisfying when like someone tells you, like even online or through an email, like, hey, I got into this series because you talked about it, or like so enthusiastic about it. Yeah, it's really cool like having that fan interaction.
In more detail, when I listened to Amina's podcast originally, they mentioned on the podcast that there was this convention of Ice and Fire that they had gone to in Ohio, in this small little bed and breakfast that looked like a castle in the woods. And it sounded like very fun, so then my wife and I dragged my wife to it. She wasn't that enthused to which we go. And we had a great time. That's where we met Tara, and then you know, friendships formed, and then this became part of our lives. And so this community has been very important to me, especially during the pandemic, because a lot of the activities during the pandemic were people I met through that Ice and Fire Con community and some of the podcasting community to keep us sane during the pandemic. We had meetups and Zooms and hangouts and games over the line, so it was very valuable to me anyway.
So if anyone already has a podcast, if you have a special experience or a listener or something you want to share, feel free to come up. Otherwise, we're going to move on to the next topic. Come up any time or any other question. So when you're planning episodes, I'm just curious, what do you do if you're a planning phase? Do you ever go as far as having like a fully scripted podcast? I don't. I just use a Google Doc. I put the general topics we're covering, and we can follow that, but we'll feel free to stray from it. That's the approach I take, and I'm curious.
Yeah, for me, I stick to the Google Doc format as well, kind of just like general bullet points of like what we want to talk about. I guess like one thing I've been pushing for recently with us is like bring on more people in manga localization, because I feel localization for cop manga especially is like very underrepresented, especially on the lettering front. So for like when we do those types of episodes, I try to like do some research on the guest, and then try to like get a few bullet points on like different conversation starters with them to kind of get an idea of who they are and like what kind of is really going into the weeds with their work. But generally I feel like me and my co-host kind of like will always somehow diverge completely from our plan. So we kind of just like play it by ear and go with the flow, and whatever happens, happens. That's what editing's for at the end.
Yeah, I've never done a fully scripted one. I definitely have listened to them, and I think they can totally work, but I think you really need like the right couple people. Assuming nobody's memorizing the entire script, you know, you need people who are going to be able to read without sounding like they're reading. With the Geek Saga podcast, like the series that we do, those are literally just 10 bullet points or whatever of thing, like 10 cringy things about the movie that we just watched, those sort of things. But the Sagas and Sass one, it was way more freeform when we started. And then we added, a few episodes in, we added summaries of what we were covering in that episode and those of the book we were covering. So like we would usually cover, let's say if the book is split into three parts, we'd cover part one in an episode. So we'd write up, you know, not super detailed summary of part one. Well, those summaries have evolved and become way more detailed, probably too detailed, honestly. So I guess you could say like the first like 10 minutes or so of our episodes is scripted in a way. And we do share, nowadays we share a lot more like quotes and stuff. So there is scripting in there, but the fun part about it is like seeing where the conversation goes. Like the time that Jonathan, we were reading Red Rising. I don't know if any of you have ever read it, but there's this character who supposedly talks in a really deep voice. So he says his name in the book, and it should be like if you're reading it, like really low, and Jonathan says, and that's just become, it's just become like a joke, a huge joke with us. And I was actually, both when I was, when we were doing the podcast and when I was editing it, I was just cracking up over it. And that's the sort of thing that I think is what makes, it's what makes podcasts like more interesting to listen to, is when there's just little moments like that that you absolutely know came out of nowhere, and those are the best ones usually.
Just want to give a quick advertisement for you, John. There's a dogfight activation site outside. You can scan your badge and get it.
Well, I mean, that was totally spontaneous at the time. But I must admit, I sort of prefer the free form, and the Vassal stuff I've done almost all completely freeform, mostly because most of the Vassals podcast episodes that I participate in have been instant reactions to either a TV show or a movie or a book. And occasionally I think one or two books, but it was much more instant reactions, so there wasn't really time to script anything. I just sort of decided online with a few days notice, let's do this on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, people are different. I like to have the writing out the notes there. Some people just like to look over it and not do anything because they have an idea what's coming up. It also helps if you're having a guest on and then they're, you know, feeling nervous. You can set the notes down. This is what I'm going to be talking about. This is what I'm going to ask about, so you get an idea what's coming.
So I had a question of kind of free-form content. How do you handle knowing, having a good sense of, like, when to wrap up? Like, when people have kind of made their points?
I guess it depends on if you're live or not, right? If you're just recording and they're your friends and you're not worried about kind of hurting their feelings or whatever, you can literally just say, okay, guys, we got to wrap this up now. If you are live, it makes it a little bit harder, honestly, and that's part of the reason why I so rarely do live webcasts anymore. But generally, it's kind of like, okay, we're time, guys, time.
Yeah, the live versus recorded is important. Also, if you know they have to go in an hour or something, they have limited time. If you know they have limited time or a couple hours, then you can give it more leeway. But if you know you have limited time, then it becomes an experience. But if they went off thread, it's a really good off thread, that might be better than what you plan to cover. Mm-hmm. So you have to make a judgment on the fly. And that just comes from experience and doing it over time.
Yeah, and I think it's important that even if you don't officially have a moderator, you sort of, as a group, we sort of know Tara is our moderator on Sagas and Sass, or if I'm on a Dean's podcast, if the Mean tends to be the moderator, and we just go with their flow. If they're ready to wrap it up, we just wrap it up.
Awesome, thank you.
Great, thanks. All right, so talk about recording equipment a bit, and I just want to, the bare minimum you can do to get in here is get a headset. Like, it doesn't have to be the most advanced thing, but get a headset to prevent echo, because one person's audio quality is bad, it ruins the experience. I know from my home podcast people are complaining. That's my initial comment, but I'm just curious like what kind of equipment that people use.
I'm going to be embarrassing because I have this weird computer that whenever I try to plug in a headset, we got a hiss constantly. So my computer is actually been better without a headset, so I haven't been using one.
Well, do you have headphones at least? Like,
no, I've got nothing. And it just, every time I've tried to use anything, it just hisses horribly. So I probably need to.
Sounds like it.
I don't really use like a headset, but I use like a wired like Sony earbuds, just because I prefer right. earbuds over like a traditional.
You don't want that echo coming back. Yeah. I'm just saying you have yeah. to talk in it, but you need something to go in your ear. You don't want the echo coming.
I can't yeah, stand totally. Earbuds. So my previous setup was just headphones. I can't remember the brand, but they were nice, like, I don't know, $90 headphones or something. But they did not have like I had an actual, that mic right there, the blue one, on an arm at my desk. The problem with that, and I don't know if it was the mic I got or the room I was in or whatever, but that mic had terrible echo. Like no matter what I did, no matter how much I played with the gain and the volume, and I had a, I can't remember what it's called, the little filter thing that you put in front of the microphone. I had one of those, obviously. But so now, currently at the moment, I am using a SteelSeries headset, which is a gaming headset. It's a really nice gaming headset. But the SteelSeries, the first version I had, lasted me years and years and was amazing. Like the sound quality, honestly, was as good or better than any mic I've ever heard people record on. But the current, this is like the third set I've had of them, and the last one died on me, and this one is now giving me popping noises randomly throughout my recording. So on Prime Day, I bought a Cherry microphone. And Cherry, they used to do mixers. They probably still do, but it's a sound company that's been around for a long time. It wasn't like the cheapest Prime Day deal, but I looked up reviews and everything, and I really liked what they were saying. One of the things being, I think the one I have is a Cherry. It's like 9.0 or something like that. So it's the highest level of their mics, and the entire microphone glows red when you're muted, which is amazing. I haven't actually recorded with it yet, so I can't promise anything about sound quality, but the reviews I read, and I did listen to some recordings that people did on it in the reviews as well, sounded really good. So I've got my fingers crossed that the recording is good, because I really like the fact that it glows red when I'm muted, because I don't usually mute myself, but when I do, I'd say at least 50% of the time I forget to unmute myself.
So you don't have to break the bank, is my overall point. No. If you get started, $30 to $100 if you get something good. But what's interesting, we all do online stuff. So if you record it in person with people, then that's something you have to specifically look for.
I would say the Cherry mic normally runs like 120, which is about the same as the blue mics. And then the little snowball ones, those are way cheaper. Those are like $50 or less. And I have a lot of friends who have been podcasting for like a decade or more who use the little snowball ones and love them. So you can get a mic for fairly affordable prices. Like you said, you don't have to break the bank, but some sort of headphones, even if they're earbuds. I like over ear just because I don't like earbuds, but also I like having that just sort of, I can't hear anything else around me, so.
Yeah, I guess on the microphone front, I definitely can second the snowball. I have a lot of friends that still use a snowball, and it comes out great. I'm not a fan of the Blue Yeti, though. For some reason, it always picks up way too much sound, and I hate it.
I think it's too strong. I think it might be better if you're doing it with two people in person. I think it's better designed for multiple people,
yeah,
than I feel.
You might
like,
be right.
It's overkill for one person. Like,
yeah.
It gets a dogfight quality, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, right now, I kind of spent a lot of money on a microphone. It's a Rode, like, MT1A, which is, like, a really nice microphone, but I wouldn't recommend starting out with that. But if you want to get into podcasting, just go with, like, a blue snowball. Like,
yeah,
it's going to sound good. And I feel like at the end of the day, like, you're going to be able to fix a lot, like, once you're editing and going through the entire process.
That's interesting, though, that I'm not the only one. Now I feel better that I'm not the only person who's just had not a great experience with the Blue Yeti. Like, I was like,
just having fun in the closet before, just to keep it the outside. It worked.
Yeah, I honestly was like, is it me? Is it my room? Did I just get a bad mic? But no, I think you're right. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know that it. Well, I mean, I lived by myself when I was using it too, so like there wasn't really a lot of background noise for it to pick up. But it was just very like tinny and echoey. So.
Well, quick question here, and we'll get into editing. Just how often do you record? We don't record that often anymore. But the ideal is, I think, to record, or at least release the episode at least once a week is the ideal, because if you start going longer, which we do, you just lose people, is my experience. But I'm curious about what release and record you started with and what are you on now?
Well, Sagas and Sass is basically trying to do it every other week. And we're pretty consistent about it. Life has gotten in the way of it in the last few months. But for the most part, we've been pretty consistent.
Yeah, when we were doing the live webcasts every other week was about all we could handle. Again, that's a different thing. So once we switched to just doing podcast recordings, we still record every other week, but we record two episodes at a time at least. So we're still putting out content, or we are putting out content every week. I probably need to be better about like actually putting the content out on the same day every week, but editing takes a long time. So we'll get into that in a minute.
my release schedule has gone all over the place. Demon Slayer podcast started out as weekly, then it went to monthly, then every other month, then back to weekly. But now, like, since I do so many podcasts, I try to at least record something once a week and then get it out onto, like, some feeds. So at least, like, if there's some sort of content, like, that I'm involved with, like, it's out there and people can listen to it. And then, like, they can reference the other podcasts as well.
I think it ties into, we'll get to this a little bit later, is you just, why are you podcasting? If you're just doing it as a hobby, then you shouldn't feel stressed, I have to get it out now or something. If you're trying to get to the point you're monetizing or it's like for your career, then you need to get it out frequently. But if it's a hobby, you have leeway, or once you establish an audience, they're willing to tolerate more. But if you're starting, you put an episode in and you don't do one for months later, they think you're gone.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's talk about my pain, which is editing podcasts. So I go by the 3-to-1 rule. So I'm the main editor as well as a host. And so the 3-to-1 means every hour of recorded episode, we pretty much do recorded episodes. It takes me 3 hours to edit, and that's a minimum, I think.
Oh, that's a minimum, yeah.
That's all. But that's it. If it's video, it's even worse.
I never edited the videos, honestly. But yeah, the sound for sure. I would say it's, for me, it's probably more than... more than 3 hours per
hour. I mean, there's a kipping analogy as well. Like, you go and you enjoy a really good meal, that's great. That's just the podcaster who records or somebody who listens. But the chef who's working there in the toilet, I can see Heather in the back and putting it all together. So, but you need them. Like, you could do, I mean, if you do a live podcast, there's no chance for editing, or you could do a podcast with minimal editing, but everybody needs some editing. Everybody has ums and gaps and stuff, such like that. It actually helps. And you also, if you have a good editor, it helps the quality of the podcast. Because one of the things I noticed is, like, when you're recording with people, and people kind of, everybody self-censors a little bit. They don't say everything comes to their mind, because, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's horrible. So you self-censor. And so you only get, let's say, 80% of what the person can get to their 100%. But if you know you have a good editor, then they give you 110%, and the editor cuts back to 100%. So if you have a good relationship, and you know the editor's going to edit, and I always tell the guests we're going to edit, we're not going to put it out in raw episode, then it can make the really good podcast increase quality. So if you have any comments on editing, I don't know if any of you do editing or thoughts on that.
I hate it so much, honestly. My personal problem is I am extremely type A. I think that if I was going to turn editing over to somebody, I would probably have to write like a 30-page document on all the things that I edit out or fix, etc. When we first started, especially with Sagas and Sass, and I mentioned earlier with the Geek Saga podcast, when I was just sharing convention panel recordings, I did no editing, and I do not ever listen to those episodes, honestly. The current ones, like, you know, like Amin said, the 3-to-1 rule, I think it's probably more than that for me, just because I am very, very picky about all the things I want to remove. And, like, not everybody's mic, that's the other thing too, not everybody's mic quality is the same. Like, until you get to the point where you're maybe earning money or have a wealthy backer, or you yourself are independently wealthy and can buy everybody that you're hosting with the same microphone, et cetera, et cetera. And there would still even be slight differences depending on environment, but unless you're all recording with the same exact equipment in soundproof rooms, you're probably going to need to play with sound levels and stuff too in post, which my editing journey was, I don't do any, to, okay, I'm going to crop out long rants that don't need to be there, and lots of ums, likes, you knows, I mean is my latest thing. I never used to cut those out, and now I'm like, get rid of it. So then again, most recently, I started playing with the...
Have you got out dog barks?
I know, right?
Maybe the dogs also hate
it. they're really yelling about it out there. So I started playing with the effects and stuff in Audacity, and I'm actually playing with volume levels, and we don't really have any echo issues, but just generally trying to make it so that everybody sounds, because I also have a problem where I trail off and my voice can get pretty low, as I'm sure you can tell right now. So I will be reading a quote or something, and the end of it will be like, so playing with, like, making that louder so you can actually understand what I'm saying without having to turn your volume up to 100, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, that's, again, why my editing takes way too long.
Yeah, I feel editing is always the biggest pain point for any podcast. Initially, when I started the Demon Slayer podcast, we had an editor, but then he got busy with life, and it all got thrown onto me. So I kind of like just went with it and just kept doing it. And I feel like now I have it down to a formula where, like, yeah, it usually takes me like 3 hours for like 1 hour of audio, but sometimes if the audio is like really good and there's no issues, I can maybe get down to 2 hours of editing. But it's kind of tough. Initially, I was starting out with Audacity too. Recently, I switched to a different software called PreSonus Studio One, which helped me like remove a lot of like background noise and like kind of like isolate out like different like parts of the audio, so I can just like mix and like arrange it. So that's helped a little bit, but it's one of those things where I feel like it's kind of helpful to be the editor when you're a podcaster, because then you kind of, when you're podcasting, you start to notice like the little ticks that you have or like things that you're doing that you could just like remove when you're talking, or like you keep in mind so that when you get to editing, you can maybe not have to worry about it.
Well, that's an excellent point. I think everyone, even if you have a main editor, it is worth yourself as a podcaster to do edit a couple episodes just to get that experience. It will improve your podcasting. You listen to yourself with a critical mind. People dread silence. So when you're talking in person with people, it's a little bit more, you might actually be silent because you can see them, but if you're online, you feel like you have to fill the gap. But actually, if you have nothing to say, if you're thinking about it, just be silent. It sounds weird when you're recording it, but be silent while you think, and the editor can just take that all out in like 1 second. But if you keep saying, I'm just trying to fill the silence, it's actually harder to remove. You gotta get used to that, being silent, okay, ready for the next topic thing. And then you can actually edit a lot in Audacity as well. Like, you can scoop a lot of the stuff in Audacity. Some people use more sophisticated software where if you want to invest in that, it actually converts to a text format, and then you can kind of like cut out the ums and things, and they show up a lot really quickly. But it is available if you're willing to pay that, so that's cool to know.
Yeah, I feel like for most use cases, Audacity is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I'd say like you really only need to invest in other software if you specifically know what that software will give you that like you need for your podcast, or will make like what you do easier. But yeah, most people just use Audacity. It's free.
Good. So we'll move on to distributing your podcast. And iTunes has always been the classic one we put on Google Podcasts as well. Anyone else put anywhere else, or YouTube, for example?
I host all of mine on my own websites. I know a lot of people will pick like a specific podcast service like Podbean or whatever. And I know Spotify not that long ago added like a thing where you can host directly through them and whatever. But I like doing it through my own website because then I always have a backup, honestly. But also when you are doing it through your own website and you just push it out through an RSS feed, it goes to every podcasting service that will pick it up. So you can find the Geek Saga and Sagas and Sass podcasts on every platform. Honestly, there are platforms and apps, like podcasting apps and stuff that I've never even heard of, where if I Google one of my shows, I'll be like, what the heck is this? I've never even heard of this, but there's my show on it because I, you know, pushed it out through the RSS feed, so.
I think all my podcasts are hosted through Spotify, except for one that I don't do the editing for. And yeah, I feel like, for me, at least my personal experience with it has been pretty easy, because like I think at least Spotify for podcasters lets you do like similar thing where the RSS feed is not automatically sent to the platform. Like say, I think Apple Podcasts usually have to manually do it.
Yeah.
But like usually otherwise it will just like do it for you. It's pretty convenient. I've dabbled with YouTube a little bit, but honestly our podcasts have never done super well on there, so I kind of just gave up. But maybe it's somewhere to explore in the future.
They've been pushing, they have YouTube podcasting now, and I keep getting emails about it and telling myself, I should probably set these up on YouTube. But
so we have an actual system that you can, before we would just convert it to have a still image of something and upload it. And it catches people that are there, that are different audiences.
Yeah, I haven't explored it yet, so I don't know how different it is from just uploading your audio as a video or whatever. I mean, I'm sure they're calling it YouTube podcasting, so it is actually just an audio thing. But yeah, I haven't looked into it too much. I don't know if I would, and it, since it just started, I would say maybe don't choose that as your main like host quite yet.
For instance, like a dedicated section on your like YouTube channel, so that's kind of the nice thing that like all your podcasts will just be all there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something I
want to
explore as well, actually.
I don't think we want to go to YouTube directly, because sometimes people are quickly finishing dinner as we start a podcast. which we wouldn't be doing if we knew we were actually going to be live on YouTube.
You say that, and yet we've had that happen.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes left. If anyone has a burning question, they come up. We have one meeting topic covered. They come up with any questions. What we're going to be talking about is two really related topics: promoting your podcast, and then just the idea of monetizing. And they both go to the ultimate root of what are you trying to do with your podcast? Is it a goal? I think there's a spectrum, really. Like, it could be a pure hobby, and then it could be a hobby where I can, maybe I'll try to get some money to make up my time, and then it could be, no, I actually want to monetize it. So I want to see where you fall on that spectrum, or even if you're not toward the monetizing side, you know what some good options there, and then went with Patreon or other sites like that, or advertising, or done paid advertising. So I'm curious if anyone has experience, and if we don't, maybe from the audience as well. But let's talk about that, voting or monetizing the podcast. Does anyone actually do that?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you monetize? So, yeah, I actually recently started doing monetization because now I think for select podcasts, Spotify for Podcasters allows you to add, like, new ads into your podcast that are just automatically curated by Spotify. So those have been doing pretty well for us. That being said, I haven't really explored any other avenues, like getting, like, direct sponsors. I've gotten a few offers in the past, but honestly, like, it's never been from, like, companies that I've been interested in, and the payout hasn't really been worth it, because I don't want my podcast to just be, like, a giant ad read. And, like, personally for me, since, like, I already work in entertainment, it's not, like, my podcasts aren't something I do for fun. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, like, profit or, like, attention they get is kind of, like, a nice little bonus on top.
Yeah, I haven't monetized anything directly, but a lot of it is because, like, I've gotten a couple offers, you know, but nothing that I would want to interrupt, you know, my recording to insert an ad about. We do have a Patreon, so there's that, and that can be, ours isn't very big in terms of money per month, but it's enough to help pay for the hosting and stuff, which is nice. But, you know, if you're going to use Patreon, you really have to research what you're going to offer based on what other podcasts or similar services offer, and make sure that you're giving people something that they're going to feel is worth paying for, which is a lot harder than you would think, because weirdly enough, for me, it's really just people who want to support us, and less, like, very rarely do they actually listen to the early releases of the episodes or anything. They wait until they're live on Spotify or wherever. So if you have, like, a good friend base that's willing to help support you, that's awesome. But if you don't, you really need to put the work into curating a Patreon that's going to actually give people something that they want. And that's, like, honestly half a job in and of itself, and keeping up with it can be exhausting on top of all the recording and editing, etc.
I actually don't like to, when I listen to other podcasts, I don't like to listen to ads, so that's why I don't put it in my own. But I can tolerate it though, but I really like the podcast, it's kind of like fan support. So I don't like to put ads, but I feel like if some of the people offer free giveaways for the audience, and I'm like, okay, I'll do that, and get a free t-shirt or whatever, or that kind of thing. Other than that, maybe it's, well, no, I think Vasil sometimes got some YouTube revenue, I think, because they put it on YouTube and they had ads from that, so that's also an option. But it's not easy, but if you get, as Aziz was talking about this last year when he says, like, if you get to about 5 or 10,000 subscribers or more, at that point people do start coming out and be able to, mm-hmm, start offering to do advertisements and pay you this and put it in, so you will hear from people. So
yeah.
I mean, I think Vasil's gets about $50 to $100 a month from various sources. Primarily the money just put right back into the hosting, and then additional money. I mean, the community is so big, it's, you know, pay $2 to each host would just make no sense. So I think it's mostly donated to charity or that much money.
Okay, just want to do one more topic here. Is transferable skills into and out of podcasting. One initial point I would make is when you listen to some of your earlier podcasts, it's actually kind of like a diary. So you're saying, oh, I had that view about something 5 or 10 years ago. It's another reason to do podcasting, just to see how you change over time. But I think there's a lot of skills you can bring into podcasting and take out. If you already have public speaking skills, then great, you can bring it in. If you don't, you need work on it. It's a good place to practice it on a topic that you're passionate about, and then you can transfer that skill out to work on something you're not passionate about, and you use it there. So interesting to get any other transferable skills or experiences where you've brought in skills from work or vice versa, you've developed something that may be useful outside of podcasting.
My day job has nothing to do with any of this, so nothing from day job has really transferred to this. But I would say the opposite. I would say that just being a moderator, particularly of convention panels, podcasts, whatever, not only gives you that public speaking experience, but it gives you like organizational skills and, you know, kind of that ability to think of something to say at the drop of a hat. And that's definitely helped me in presenting stuff for my day job. And also, honestly, I think in getting my current day job, like with interviews and everything. So that's a plus.
I'm one of those people that puts my podcast on my like actual resume. And like when I was like applying to a lot of like entertainment and gaming jobs back in the day, it actually got a lot more attention on my resume because of that. I guess in my current job, since like Prime Video internationally has a lot of like anime, for instance, being knowledgeable about that stuff and talking about it has been helpful in the office in like various ways. So it's been interesting seeing that kind of like little connect happen.
Oh, we got some questions here.
Yes, first, I want to applaud you for all your podcasts and everything. A lot of you sound like you're doing just because you want to share your knowledge and your wisdom and everything, and I applaud you for that. That is awesome.
Thank you.
But if you want to monetize your podcast, it's intellectual property. How do you go about protecting it? Have y'all ever looked into different ways of protecting it? Because we all know when something gets on the web, it's free game.
Right.
So I'm just curious if y'all have looked into any ways of maybe protecting it or doing things with it. Just curious.
So it's a good question. When we upload, we have to upload to the Internet Archive, and we choose a license that maintains, so you have to choose what license you're putting in. Right, if it goes on there and somebody just uses it, then you, in theory, you have to follow some legal means to follow up on that. Thankfully, I've never experienced that. Like someone's doing my work and we are not monetizing it. So I wouldn't be able to speak more on it, probably just have to search on it. But I do know that when we upload it, we choose a particular license that maintains the class. We don't give up control over it. So when you upload, if you go with some private service, for example, like, and you upload to them, in their terms, it might be something where they get your IP. So that is something to be careful with. You can think where you upload it and what you're following is to read the license. I know that, but beyond that, I can't advise anybody wants to has anything on that.
Honestly, I've never really thought about it. Luckily, none of my podcasts have ever been like uploaded by someone else.
Yeah.
I guess the monkey on that front.
Yeah, I've never had a problem either, but same as Amin, just having the licenses on your end. And then also a simple thing, because I upload them to my websites, having a copyright notice, like this is copyrighted to me at the bottom of each page of the website. I mean, honestly, it's all kind of smoke and mirrors. Like somebody can still take it at the end of the day. But again, that's never happened. But if somebody does, it's easier than you would think to get a takedown.
Yeah, you can record it, and once you get enough listeners, who's going to listen to that fake one, right?
Yeah,
It's almost like, why would you even steal from you? Yeah.
There's also so many podcasts, it's like, somebody would really, I don't even know how they would make any money or anything off of it if they're just going around stealing other people's podcasts, and maybe that's why it doesn't seem to happen very much.
We've got 2 minutes, so there's one more question. Okay.
Yeah. I had a couple questions. So my wife and I have been married 37 years, so we're going to do something based on our relationship, but also the fact that I'm a pretty good storyteller. I remember so many things, but I lose my keys on a daily basis. So I'm kind of weird that way. And so I didn't get past, for instance, we did a kind of a practice session and put on headsets. And I did Toastmasters for a long time, so I found myself going to Toastmaster mode while I was talking.
Right.
And she's like, "You're really boring on the microphone." And I'm like, "I know, because I keep trying to edit myself as I'm talking, so I need to be more relaxed." But a couple questions I have for you. What is a good time frame for a podcast, for instance? Half hour, hour? What keeps the audience, how long can you keep an audience entertained?
All right, quick answers to go in a couple minutes, but I'd say half hour to an hour is a good starting point, I think. That's good.
When we actually first started Sagas and Sass, one of our co-hosts was like, "Nobody's going to listen to this 2-hour recording we just did." And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Most of the podcasts I listen to are 2 hours long." So I think it really just, it depends on the audience that you're trying to gain. I think like with a literature podcast, it's really easy and okay to go well over an hour, 90 minutes, 2 hours. But if you're doing more of like a short form thing, if you wanted to do one about relationships, I would stick to 30 minutes, honestly.
Okay.
So it really depends on the subject.
Is that it's gonna be us two? But my question was, and I was just secure, would it be good to have a moderator, for instance, to sort of moderate us as we're doing it, or would it just be us two? That was the question that came up during our event. Because my son has done podcasts, and I'm wondering, should I have him moderating us? Would that be a good idea?
All right, 30 seconds.
I would test it.
Yeah.
I would run a couple of tests either way.
Yeah.
And then feel what sounds better to maybe try to test it out.
But don't be afraid to release it.
Yeah.
Don't be like, all right, I want to. I'm going to see how people respond.
Okay. Yeah. And then the last question is, just like when you write stuff, you usually write like 5 pages and you edit it down to a certain page, you know. When you're doing your podcast, do you have like a number of how much you do and then you're cutting stuff out? Like you record 2 hours at the end of what's an hour?
We do cut down sometimes, but you can also put things in an after show or keep it.
Okay.
Just get it down and then edit it down. That's the way to do it. Don't self-censor while you're recording.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate all the information.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.